Blog Talk Radio.
After years of blood, sweat, and tears, it all comes down to this.
Draft Weekend Odine. To celebrate this year's Gridiron Draft, the Fantasy Sports Channel is rushing more than 24 hours of live draft action your way.
And we're the only place on the planet to do it with a fantasy football twist.
Excitement begins Saturday, April 25th at 10 a.m. Eastern, with 14 continuous hours of nonstop draft day coverage, plus another live draft block beginning Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern.
The Fantasy Sports Channel.
Only on Blog Talk Radio.
It's a schedule you can bet on.
It is April 24, T-minus 20 hours. The NFL draft will commence at that time. While we here at All Access Football Friday show, we got a little something for you now, and we have a little something for you tomorrow. First up today, we've got Omar Kelly from the Sun Sentinel. We have Jamie Sanderson from the Detroit Free Press, as well as the Mike in the Morning show in Detroit. Jason Jones from the Sacramento Bee. And doing what we do, we've got some players for you as well. We've got Duke Robinson coming on with his cohort, Phil Loadhold. We have Michael Orr, the old tackle from Ole Miss. We have Juan Garcia, the center from Washington, and Gerald Cadogan of Penn State. I am Rodney Tal. I'm here with my guy, Ralph Mancini. What's up, Ralph? You ready for this?
Oh, yeah. We're talking offensive linemen today. I like this kind of party.
Oh, yeah. All right. And we've got Dan Mogagnon. What's up, Dan?
Hey, no doubt about it. This is how you build winning franchises, by those blocks of granite up front. It was true in the days of Lombardi, and it's still true today.
The beauty of the NFL, and it all kicks off, like I said, in 20 hours, we get that first pick. And speaking of the first pick, just going briefly over the news, it looks like the Lions are going to take Stafford. As you well know, most teams, when you have the number one draft pick, they want that guy signed and sealed before the draft commences. And it sounds like they're working hard on getting Mr. Stafford signed, even though Curry still has a shot, but it looks like the Lions are going to take Stafford number one. All right. One thing we have to talk about, the Cardinals and their trade for Anquan Boldin. We told you last week it was coming to a head. Both sides sound like they wanted to make that trade. So now it sounds as if the Cardinals are lowering their demand from a first rounder to an actual second rounder. And with that in mind, we have an offer being reported by Sal Palantonio from ESPN that the Eagles have offered a 2009 third rounder, a 2010 second rounder, and Winston Justice for Anquan Boldin. All right, Ralph, you look like you're ready to jump at me. So let's have at it. What's up with Anquan Boldin then?
Well, as far as that offer goes, I don't know how appealing Winston Justice would be. but, you know, hey, look, the Cardinals, I think, you know, they're being very fair here in asking only for a second rounder, you know, in exchange for one of the premier receivers in the NFL. And if I'm one of those teams that's interested in Anquan Boldin, man, if all I have to give up is a second round pick, I'm jumping all over this. I mean, you're talking about a proven receiver who was in his prime, a guy who last year scored 11 touchdowns in 12 games. I mean, this guy is the real deal. You know, if you're a team that's looking to win now, like the Eagles and the Giants are, I mean, you have to make this move.
Well, in today's NFL, where I think, you know, obviously those two teams are the ahead of the class in the win now category, but I think this is an overall win now league. If he can be gotten for a second-round pick, I mean, how many teams could be in these sweepstakes, Ralph? I mean, could it reach double figures? Who wouldn't want to bring in a guy like Anquan Boldin for a mere second-round pick?
I have to think that they're going to be at least, and I say at least five or six teams in the running along with our beloved New York Jets. So I think there's going to be an all-out war for Anquan Boldin. You know, the Cardinals are going to have their pick of the litter. And I can definitely see a showdown taking place between the Giants and the Eagles here because, hey, I'll tell you what, if either one of those two teams gets Anquan Boldin, it's not looking good for the team that doesn't come up with him.
All right, I want to make an announcement before we go further into the news and discuss this. Be aware, the 2009 NFL Draft Bible final big board has been released. So once again, go to NFLDraftBible.com and you can have that. Also, listen to exclusive coverage of the 2009 NFL Draft on All Access Football Radio. As you heard in the promo, hopefully you heard that all day. So check that out. And also, we also have new player highlight videos added to the profile pages. In other words, go to NFL Draft Bible. The first 60 prospects on the NFL Big Board, if you click on their name, you will see video highlights of those guys. So be sure to log on to NFLDraftBible.com. Also, for our 7-round pick-by-pick blog and keep up with the latest news via Twitter. All right? Gentlemen.
I just want to get back to this Bolden thing before we leave it. Ralph, any chance this is a case of some bait and switch going on where they're putting up the sale sign and say, come in here and get a discount, and they're hoping not one but two customers stroll in to buy that car that's on discount, and suddenly they can maybe use those two teams against one another to drive that price back up to a first-round pick?
Well, what I think this does is I think this could very well just encourage more teams to get into the mix here. So maybe instead of having only three or four teams compete for the services of Anquan Boldin, maybe you might bring in three or four more teams, and that's only going to help the Arizona Cardinals just get more in terms of picks and possible players. And I'll tell you what, but I mean, I think the Philadelphia Eagles have to do a little bit better than Winston Justice, though, although those picks, the second and third round picks, are certainly appealing.
Yeah, but if he goes to Arizona, he won't have to block OCU Mignora or Justin Tuck, so maybe his life will be a little easier out West Coast.
And the Cardinals do need depth. I mean, we're talking about a depth player who can basically fill in at either tackle spot. So we're not talking about a guy that you're bringing over to start with. And sometimes a change of scenery makes all the difference. A guy clicks with the right coach. So
yeah, well, Justice hasn't shown me anything, and he still has to block guys like Chris Long, who's an up and coming player with the Rams, and guys of that ilk. So, but look. Any way you slice it, the Cardinals are going to get a nice package in return for Boldin.
Okay, and also I want to remind everyone, don't forget Blog Talk Radio in the chat room. You have a question, you got a comment, we'll do our best to answer it or get it on the air for you. So once again, any questions, comments, or even complaints, Blog Talk Radio, hit us up in the chat room. All right? I'll be shocked with the Boldin thing. I expect the Giants have to be the big players in here because there's no team that's right there like the Giants. And you give them an elite running back, an elite wide receiver with all else that they've got, and I think that team has to get them. Give up that number one pick and call it a day.
I don't disagree at all, man. I think they have to do it. As we said, they're a win now team. They're veterans. Their top players are all in the prime. They're not a team that's up and coming. They're a team that's ready to, you know, obviously. Super Bowl 2 years ago, best record in the NFC last year. So their window is right now, this season, the following season, particularly with Eli Manning. You lost Plaxico. You got to replace him, and you cannot do that with the rookie. Yeah, some guys come in like a Dwayne Bowe and put up 80 catches as a rookie, but there's no guarantee that guy is going to be available where the Giants pick right now. Kenny Britt, I think, is a guy that has the potential to be a number one receiver down the road, maybe two, more likely 3 years down the road. So if you're the New York Giants, I don't see how you don't either get, if not Boldin, Braylon Edwards from Cleveland. You got to bring in one of these two guys. And I think when you're picking up, when you're talking about a late first-round pick, I think that's fair value, man. I really don't think that's asking for too much for either one of those guys.
Yeah, well, I think you're right in saying that a rookie just can't come in. And you can't expect this guy just to play like a veteran. You know, a guy like Randy Moss only comes once every 10 years. So, and it'll be interesting to see if that runner-up, let's say it turns out to be a showdown between the Eagles and the Giants. It'll be interesting to see if that runner-up decides to go after Braylon Edwards, who's a little bit younger, a little bit taller, but is not as consistent as Mr. Boldin.
It's funny. You got the whole floor versus ceiling argument here. Braylon Edwards definitely has the higher ceiling, but Anquan Boldin has a higher floor because you know what he's going to give you, all right? But speaking of receivers, let's discuss now. The Atlanta Falcons made a great move, a very bold move yesterday in securing the talents of Mr.
Tony Gonzalez
for a second-round pick next year. Okay, it is a little bit risky. We're talking about a 33-year-old who's coming off of a year where he had 96 receptions, 1,058 yards. Now, keep this in mind. Contrast this with Atlanta Falcons' best tight end, their best tight end in terms of receptions. Justin Peel, 15 catches, 159 yards. So I think they made a mild upgrade, to to say the very least.
A mild upgrade?
I'm being facetious.
Yeah, yeah, okay, okay. I'm sorry about that. But I don't think they took a chance at all, you know? I think, you know, even though, you know, Tony Gonzalez at this point is in his mid-30s, I think we're talking about a player here who keeps in tip-top shape. He hasn't been a player who has been injury-prone throughout the years. And if you've been paying attention to Tony Gonzalez in the past few years, I mean, he's changed his diet around. He's now a vegetarian. He's lost some weight. He's actually quicker than he was about 5 or 6 years ago. So to me, this is a no-brainer. I think the Atlanta Falcons have improved themselves more than any other team in the NFL already with this one move. And I think it's a no-brainer because who do they really have? You just mentioned Justin Peele was their leading receiver at tight end. Now, what this also allows the Falcons to do now is it allows them to focus solely on defense. And we all know that they have a lot of holes on defense. They had a lot of departures during the offseason, so they really need to focus on it. And wouldn't it surprise me in the least if they dedicate or if they all their picks tomorrow and Sunday are all going to be on defense. So, and the other thing I like about this trade, they traded a 2010 second round pick and not a 2009 pick, which again allows them just to solely focus on defense. A great move.
Ronnie, I just want to throw out there, we got some breaking news. We're hearing that Brayshon Quinn to Denver will happen in exchange for the 12th pick. Inside sources have informed us. We have yet to confirm this, but this looks like this may go down. Brayshon Quinn potentially for the 12th overall pick.
Guys, so what does this mean now? Does this mean that Cleveland could possibly be looking at Mark Sanchez in the first round with their 5th overall pick?
I think you got to think that's for sure. I mean, I was actually texting with our buddy Martin Rucker last night, and I was throwing some stuff at him to see what he thought, and I threw the names I threw the name Sanchez at him as well as Michael Crabtree, and he said he would be pretty surprised if it was Crabtree, but wouldn't be as surprised if it turned out to be Sanchez.
I mean, Denver would ask a 12? The 12th pick in the first round for Brady Quinn. Now, I love Brady Quinn, but, I mean, right now you're talking about an unproven quarterback. That seems to me a lot to give up for Brady Quinn.
And once again, we have that Bill Belichick connection, you know, with Brady Quinn. First it was Charlie Weiss to Romeo Crennel. Now it could be, you know, Mr. McDaniels coming over. Maybe Charlie Weiss is whispering into his ear, telling him about Mr. Quinn.
I can definitely see why Denver makes this move. I mean, if you take a look at it, if they just stand pat in the draft, if they would have decided to stand pat with that 12th pick in the draft, they would have probably just been left with Josh Freeman. And you're telling me Josh Freeman is better than Brady Quinn? I don't think so. Josh Freeman's just a project, at least with Brady Quinn. You know that he could step in right now and he can play. He can contribute right away. I mean, he is in his third year right now. So I think this is a pretty good move for Denver.
Well, the question I think immediately would jump to me is, if you're the Cleveland Browns, then why would you deal Brady Quinn? I mean, there's a reason they would be open to moving this kid and maybe drafting a rookie, an inexperienced rookie who's going to need time. Why not stay with Quinn then? I mean, obviously they see something they don't like to want to move him.
Well, this is the one question I have now, is that Cleveland, with that 5th pick, are they going to be guaranteed the opportunity of getting Sanchez? Because what if Seattle takes him with the 4th spot? So maybe does this lead the Cleveland Browns maybe to trade up to the number 3 spot with Kansas City?
All right, we appear to have a caller on the line. Caller, welcome to the All Access Football Friday show.
Hey, it's Omar Kelly with the Sun Sentinel.
Hey, Omar Kelly. Hey, what's going on, Omar? How are you?
I'm all right, guys. How you doing?
We're doing great. Thanks for joining us.
What's this?
Right on time, actually.
Brady Quinn?
Yes.
What's
your thoughts on that?
What happened?
We're hearing reports that it looks like they may deal Brady Quinn to Denver for the 12th overall pick.
Well, Denver, I guess it was accurate that Denver really likes Brady Quinn. I mean, I don't see the harm in having two quarterbacks, Derek Anderson and Brady Quinn, compete for that starting spot, but they probably looked at all the practices When I'm just saying they, I mean Cleveland coaches and executives, Eric Mangini, they probably looked at all the practices, broke down all the film, and felt more comfortable with Derek Anderson and the fact that they could probably go out and get another one of the young quarterbacks in the draft. But, you know, I think it's better to have two quarterbacks competing for that spot, especially maybe they didn't want to deal with the pressure of having Brady Quinn be a Cleveland guy and not be that starter. So, you know, maybe they felt a little bit more comfortable with getting the pick as opposed to having the player.
Well, Omar, speaking of two quarterbacks potentially competing, how about those Dolphins? Could Chad Henne join the competition against Chad Pennington, or will he sit another year and learn from the sidelines?
I think this is going to be a situation where Chad Henne, I'm sorry, I'm like Chad, as if that helped explain which one I'm talking about. Henne will have an opportunity to prove himself in the exhibition season. He'll get the bulk of the run, and then it'll be a situation where he'll hand over the reins to Pennington. Pennington will have an opportunity in the first half of the season to get them in contention for another playoff run. I think if they're not in contention for a playoff run by the midpoint of the season, they'll probably hand the reins over to Henne, just because he is the quarterback of the future. He's expected to be the starter in 2010. Chad Pennington is entering a contract year, and the Dolphins have expressed no interest in re-signing him, and I don't think they will unless he sort of has a Kurt Warner-type season.
Hey, Omar, Ralph Mancini here. I just wanted to get back to the Brady Quinn trade for a second. I just wanted to pick your brain. Now, with Cleveland being in that fifth spot, do they now trade that fifth pick that they have to the Kansas City Chiefs so they could move up ahead of Seattle to take a Mark Sanchez? Do you envision that happening tomorrow?
You know, I don't know what's going on with Mark Sanchez. Now, I just read something on Pro Football Talk about the Rams ordering a flight for him, to go. I guess maybe that he's in line to be the number two pick. I think a lot of the talk right now about Mark Sanchez is basically for trade fodder. There's no player in this draft that a lot of teams want to move up for as opposed to the quarterback. And all of a sudden this week he goes from a guy who's maybe, let's hope he goes to the Jets, or more realistic, he's going to the Jets or Denver, to now he's a top five pick. Now he's possibly the second pick in this draft. You know, I think a lot of it is when you deal in this industry a lot, you deal with a lot of smoke screens and a lot of guys trying to do things to raise players' values because it'll benefit them in the long run. You know, Jacksonville, for instance, expressed a lot of interest in him publicly and, you know, was floating out the idea, you know what, we might take this quarterback. And why is that? Because they're possibly looking for somebody to trade up with them to swap the number eight pick, just because that's not a position that they're very comfortable in. And you know, it's a situation where a lot of teams all of a sudden have interest in him because he's probably the most tradable player in this draft.
Omar, getting back to the Dolphins here, what do you see them doing in the first round? The way I look at it, I think they could be going either with a wide receiver or they could be going with one of these 3-4 defensive ends. You know, to me, it would make a lot of sense for the Dolphins to take maybe somebody like a Larry English if he's out there. You know, the one thing you know about Larry English had, I think, something like between 32 and 33 sacks as a collegiate at Northern Illinois. You know this guy could rush the passer, and so that's the direction I would be going in if he is available. What are your thoughts on that? Would you be leaning more towards a wide receiver?
Actually, no, I'm not. I'm a guy who likes the big uglies and likes defense, so Larry English has been my pick all week. In fact, I've named him in a number of mock drafts as opposed to one I did for Sirius yesterday, where surprisingly Beanie Wells was there at 25, and I just, knowing them, they're going to go with the best available player. And if Beanie Wells is out there, I could definitely see that being the pick. Brandon Pettigrew also, the top tight end, both of their tight ends, Anthony Fasano and David Martin, are going to be free agents after this season. They might be looking a year ahead, and this is a situation where he might also be the top-rated player on their board. I do think they want to come out of this draft with one of the hybrid linebackers, one of the elite hybrid linebackers. And from what I understand, the guys that they really have their sights set on are Connor Barwin and Larry English. Now, will that be the case in terms of them being in position to get either of those players? I think they're going to be jockeying a lot with the Patriots and also the Jets to get into position to take some of these elite hybrid guys.
Omar, let me ask you this. I was talking to Al Groh yesterday, and we were talking about his guy, Clint Sintem, who's an outside linebacker that actually has experience playing that position. Do you think that will factor in at all in their thinking, and that at least maybe he might not have the potential of some of the other guys, but you kind of know what you have with him. When you're taking that defensive end, you're really kind of throwing it up in the air and hoping that he can convert to an outside linebacker.
I think they're looking for the sexy as opposed to the safe. They're looking for guys
okay.
that they know that present a little pop when they hit somebody. They're not chase tacklers. I think they're looking for guys who, without a doubt, can pressure the quarterback. That's their strength if they're going to go for these hybrid guys. And that's just not Clint Sintem. I watched him at the Senior Bowl, and I thought he was a little bit stiff for my taste. And
yep.
I know he's probably going to be a little bit stiff for the what I call the trifecta, Bill Parcells, Jeff Ireland, Tony Sperano. So I definitely don't see him being the pick for the Dolphins unless he's probably still out there in the third round and is the best available players. They have clearly a couple of needs on this team in terms of cornerback. Nose tackle is without a doubt a need just because Jason Ferguson's entering his, I think it's 14th season. He's 34 years old. 12th season, he's 34 years old. He's got his openly talked about retirement. They have to go get a backup nose tackle to be groomed, considering it takes 2 years to learn that position. And then you have to find somebody else to rush the passer, whether that be a defensive end. They've got a couple. They spent 3 draft picks in last year's draft to address the defensive end position. And I think they're probably set there, or a hybrid outside linebacker, a converted college defensive end. And you know it's going to take a little bit of time for him to groom and develop, but they've got a guy from the CFL standout, Cameron Wake, in the fold.
Mm-hmm.
They've got Matt Roth, who's in his second year learning the position. Maybe he blossoms in his second year as a starter. And you've got guys like Charlie Anderson and Eric Walden, who was a rookie last year. They picked him up off the waiver wire. You know, those are guys, it takes 2 years to learn that position. James Harrison wasn't the dynamic player he immediately became. He wasn't a dynamic player immediately. He took a couple of years to develop. And I think that's the situation. They've got 7 projects at outside linebacker. They probably want to add just one more. And out of those 8 players, see who develops as that complement next to Joey Porter.
So I guess what you're saying is it really wouldn't make much sense to bring back Jason Taylor because he would just be holding back a lot of these younger players.
That's the exact term that Jeff Ireland used, that he could potentially be a progress stopper for some of these young players. That right there, I mean, threw a gallon of cold, icy water on, you know, the sexy Jason Taylor return. I think their biggest concern is that Jason Taylor might end up with their biggest foe, the New England Patriots, and they probably were hoping that he was signed by New England because it would have meant that their chances to get one of these young hybrid linebackers like Larry English or Connor Barwin would increase just because it wouldn't be a need position. If you look at it, a lot of the teams who are going into this draft and like, you know, the Chiefs who signed Zach Thomas, they're in a situation where they're trying to address positions that they don't necessarily feel comfortable that they can address in the draft right away immediately with players who are ready to start. And if New England would have signed Jason Taylor, I think the Dolphins would have been happy and thrilled, but they didn't. So now he's still out there, and the Patriots are probably still targeting the players that Miami wants.
And Omar, let me ask you a big-picture question. What's the feel there in terms of this being Tony Sperano's team? Because he had such success as a rookie head coach, does it feel more like he's the head of the team, or is the shadow of Big Tuna still looming large?
You know what? The funny thing is he's there and he's present, and he has a sort of godfather-esque, you know, overseer sort of feel. However, you know, without a doubt, this is Tony's team. I think the only time that Tony really takes a back seat to Jeff Ireland and Bill Parcells is when it comes to talent acquisition and free agency in the draft. You know, that's when those two step to the forefront and they take care of their business, and Tony is just used to consult. Now, when the season is in play, I think the tables are flipped, and Tony Sperano is the guy who basically oversees everything, and he consults the other two. And it really has been a marriage that's worked perfectly. I mean, obviously, the first season was a major success, but you don't see many power plays in this organization because they work. That's why I call them the trifecta, because they work so well together, and that's probably the benefit of having them all come together and be married together. You know, they know that their ability to cooperate and communicate will lead to this team's overall success, and they do a very good job of it.
Well, hey, Omar, one thing that we know for certain about the Miami Dolphins, at some point, whether it's on Saturday or Sunday, they're going to have to pick a receiver. Now, what types of receivers are the Dolphins looking for? Are they looking for that fast, dynamic player, kind of like a Percy Harvin, or are they looking for a bigger receiver, more like a Kenny Britt or maybe a Brian Rybicki? What exactly are the Dolphins looking for?
Well, here's the thing. They need two things. They need a boundary receiver who's got a little bit of size to him, and they need a guy who is a run-after-catch specialist. That's the one missing ingredient that they don't have in the receiving core, a guy who can take a 10-yard dig and run it for an extra 15 by making a couple of defenders miss. That's the one thing that they're missing, and I think the ideal thing, because they only really have a spot on the roster for one more receiver. They've got, you know, Ted Ginn, Greg Camarillo, Devon Betts, Brandon London, who is a top special teams guy, a guy they want to develop. And then there's space for one more because you have to think that they're going to cut Ernest Wilford after training camp. So you basically want a complement of those two things in that one player. And I think me personally, I think Hakeem Nicks or Brian Rybicki would probably be the ideal fits. Just Rybicki doesn't give you the yards after catch, but – you know, in college, he must have averaged something like 20-something yards a catch. He was a big play threat, and I think that they could definitely use that. They could definitely use Nick's his run-after-catch ability. I mean, he makes the most of whatever he's given. And then you've got a situation with Percy Harvin, who is definitely a run-after-catch specialist. He'll probably be there when they pick not only in the first round, but maybe again in the second round with pick number 44. The only problem with him is that he's got so many character concerns. You have to wonder if they've taken him across off their board, considering character is such a big issue with them.
All right. Hey, Omar, we want to thank you very much for joining us. It's going to be a big weekend. Being that we're Jet fans, we hope you guys do well, but not too well, okay?
Oh, of course. I didn't even know. I wouldn't have done this interview if I knew you were a Jets fan.
Hey, Omar, right, you have a good week.
You guys going to get a quarterback? What's up, man? You can't really think you're going to go into a situation like you are, status quo.
Hey, build a strong defense and the quarterback. Don't expect much from the quarterback.
Look, quarterback doesn't matter, huh?
Hey,
yeah, that's
don't sleep on Brett Ratliff.
Yeah, I did like it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. He's unproven, but I'm willing to take a chance on him if, you know, nothing else materializes.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
And Omar, I think we all kind of agree with your take on Sanchez, you know, a guy who – before the Rose Bowl, you know, nobody was talking about him being a first-round pick or that he should leave early, and suddenly he's this surefire lock, top-five guy that you should give up your whole draft for. We're not sold either that he's, you know, he's that guy.
That, you know, I, without a doubt, would rather I think he's the best quarterback in the draft. I do. And the reason I say that is because I've watched Matt Stafford, and I've never been impressed with him. He's had talent around him. He hasn't won anything big in his three seasons as a starter at Georgia. They've had plenty of talent. Now, the thing that I've been taught most in terms of evaluating quarterbacks is accuracy. He who has the accuracy wins the games, and clearly to me that's Sanchez. The only knock on him is the experience.
Well, Omar, since we're back on this draft talk again, let me ask you this question. I mean, you can't knock Jake Long, and he was a great pick. But looking back, do you think the Dolphins would take Matt Ryan right now?
Hindsight is 20/20. I don't think so, because I think they, from what I know about the organization, they had the three quarterbacks, Matt Ryan, Joe Flacco, and Chad Haney, rated very closely in that order. they were comfortable with getting any of the three, and they felt more comfortable with taking the number one tackle and the third best quarterback as opposed to taking the first graded quarterback and the number 10 tackle in the draft. You see what I'm saying? So
yeah.
It was a situation where it was the best fit for them. Jake Long turned out to be a Pro Bowler in his rookie season. He was very solid. You'd have to think he's going to be a solid starter for the Dolphins for the next 10 years in case of injury. And to be real with you, you know, Matt Ryan inherited a Pro Bowl team. I mean, not a Pro Bowl team, a playoff team that was just missing a franchise quarterback. If you really think about it, they fell apart when they lost, you know, Michael Vick. They were a playoff team with Michael Vick. They were a contending team with Michael Vick. They just lost him. So when he stepped in, and without a doubt he played well, they had a lot of pieces around him. I don't think the Dolphins really would have had the pieces that they needed if they would have taken Matt Ryan with the first pick.
Atlanta certainly had a lot of very nice skill position players, but there were a lot of question marks on their offensive line going into last season.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would have to give Ryan some credit there, too.
Yeah, without a doubt, he proved he was a very good quarterback. But, you know, you don't know how that's going to pan out until you see how, you know, Chad Henne plays. And to be honest with you, I don't know. But if he, you know, I went into the draft knowing that they had all three quarterbacks rated very closely and in that order, and that they were pretty much comfortable targeting Jake Long because they felt like they can get Chad Henne. They took a risk when they didn't take Chad Henne at 31 and felt it was really going to blow up their entire draft. And then he fell to them at 56, and they were nearly doing backflips. So, it turned out that it worked for them. Now, it all hinges on how Chad Henne plays and plays when he becomes a starter. But, you know, one thing they made very crystal clear is they really liked him. They liked him his rookie season. They liked him in the exhibition season. He did play pretty well. And they were comfortable with him as a starter. And he was going to be the starter if they didn't acquire Chad Pennington.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, Omar. I think this time we all going to say goodbye. But we'd
all
love
right.
to have you back again.
No problem, guys.
All right, thanks again. That's Omar Kelly from the Sun Sentinel dropping some knowledge on us about the Miami Dolphins and the two quarterbacks, and I can't really disagree with them, especially on Sanchez. I don't know what happened the last 2 days. All of a sudden, Sanchez is like this great quarterback. And, Dan, you and I covered college football, doing the College Football Insider show, and we were waiting for this guy to show up all year, and he waited until the last game of the year, and now he's a franchise quarterback.
Well, he showed up at the right time when NFL people are all watching the bowl games, and, you know, sometimes it's that one lasting impression that you leave. That's all it takes.
And, you know, the other thing about Sanchez is he had a tremendous pro day as well. And, you know, a lot of times these pro days, they're overblown, they're overrated. I mean, they're set up to make these players
men
look good.
Shorts.
Yeah, men in shorts, exactly. So, you know, to me, really, it's all about what he does on film, you know, what he does during the season. And I'm sorry, I mean, Mark Sanchez he didn't show me enough consistency for him to be considered a top five pick. But right now, the way it looks, I think there's no doubt he's going to be a top five pick come tomorrow.
All right, folks, just hold on. Stay with us for a minute.
After years of blood, sweat, and tears, it all comes down to this.
Draft Weekend Odyne. To celebrate this year's Gridiron Draft, the Fantasy Sports Channel is rushing more than 24 hours of live draft action your way.
And we're the only place on the planet to do it with a fantasy football twist.
Excitement begins Saturday, April 25th at 10 a.m. Eastern with 14 continuous hours of nonstop draft day coverage. Plus another live draft block beginning Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern. The Fantasy Sports Channel. Only on Blog Talk Radio.
It's a schedule you can bet on.
Okay. Also, don't forget to check us out in the chat room. Any questions, come with it. And I also want to go back over. Dan gave us some breaking news on it's a rumor right now. It's unconfirmed at this point. That's a trade between the Denver Broncos and the Cleveland Browns. The Browns would receive the Denver Broncos' 12th pick, first-round pick, the 12th overall pick, and of course the Broncos would receive Brady Quinn. There have been rumors all week that the Broncos were interested in Brady Quinn, but once again, that is unconfirmed at this time. All right, gentlemen, we're going to move on right now, and we're going to look at the offensive linemen. All right, looking at the landscape of the offensive linemen,
I'm going to start with you, Dan. Are there any franchise left tackles in this draft?
Well, I think there's definitely a couple franchise left tackles in this draft. And let's start with the big kid out of Baylor, Jason Smith, who looks like he could be that number two pick potentially with the St. Louis Rams. It looks like it's going to be between him and Eugene Monroe most likely. But Jason Smith's a guy we've been hearing a lot about. He's NFL ready as a pass blocker. He's got good lateral quickness. He's got the strength. He threw up 33 reps up at the NFL scouting combine. The one concern with him is, his arms aren't that long. His hands aren't that big. And I know people say, this is too much minutia. Do we need to measure everything? Are we going to measure how long their earlobe is or whatever? But the arm length and hand size do have an impact. And, I mean, even something in terms of the bench press. I mean, if you have shorter arms, it's easier to do multiple reps. And on the line of scrimmage, it makes it more difficult for you to keep the defensive lineman from getting into your body. And that's what you want to do on a bull rush. If the defensive lineman gets too close to you and into your body, that leaves you vulnerable to that bull rush. And a lot of this is hand fighting, hand battling. So, yeah, bigger arms and bigger hands and longer arms are definitely valuable. I mean, I think he's got the potential to be a franchise left tackle, but I think because there aren't many overall franchise left players in this draft, that's why he's going to be a top five pick. But I wouldn't put him in the class of a Joe Thomas or a Jake Long last year. I think those guys were more surefire Pro Bowl-type guys than Jason Smith or maybe even Eugene Monroe, who were the kind of the consensus top two guys. And the next guy I'll talk about is Andre Smith out of Alabama. I think this kid still might end up being the best left tackle coming out of this draft. He's definitely a dominant road grader. There's no doubt about that. He's the best run blocker among this group. And I think the potential is still there. He does have long arms, 35 3/8 inches, which was the second longest to only Phil Loadhole at the NFL scouting combine. So he has got the potential there to improve in pass protection. Remember, he's a little younger than the rest of these guys, but he stepped in day one and started as a true freshman in Alabama in the Big Bad SEC, which speaks volumes. Obviously, there are concerns, but, he's not necessarily a bad kid. So if teams want to take guys off because of that issue, I don't think that's really the issue with him. The question here is decision-making, work ethic. I think if he goes in the right situation where somebody can light a fire under him, I would not be surprised if Andre Smith turns out to be a franchise left tackle.
And, it's interesting. You talk about the importance of arm length. You take a look at a guy like Robert Gallery, who was drafted just a few years ago at tackle, and that was his major problem in establishing himself as a premier tackle at the pro level, his lack of arm length, and that's why he's playing guard right now.
All right. Well, Ralph, finish us off. What are the best of the rest of the tackles?
Well, a couple of guys that I like here, Michael Orr and Eugene Monroe. I want to start with Michael Orr, arguably the most gifted tackle in the draft. Orr combines natural athleticism and strength and truly improved his run blocking last season. As a pass protector, the Ole Miss tackle just locks onto and obliterates pass rushers with his long arms and extraordinary lateral agility. He's still a bit raw, or still tends to play high and keep his hands low at times, and he must be a more willing downfield blocker, but he has rare quickness, quick feet, which make him a special talent worth investing a high pick on, in my opinion. And then you have Eugene Monroe. He has better technique than Orr. He's a better drive blocker as well, with excellent burst and opening up holes in the running game. He could be a lead blocker on pulling and trapping plays. He's terrific in playing in space, but he must be better aware of inside and delayed blitzes, and he needs to develop more of a mean streak, in my opinion. But overall, I think he has all the tools to be an immediate impact player with a thick lower body, quick feet, long arms to handle the bull rush and outside pressure. And another concern with Monroe is his lingering knee issues. But overall, I mean, this guy, he really has it all. Big upside with Eugene Monroe.
All right, Dan, which interior lineman will go on day one?
I'm sorry, you mean other tackles that are going to go on day one? Because the other tackles I have here are William Beatty out of UConn and Phil Lotto. I'm going to start off with Beatty. He's explosive off the snap. He uses his agility to get to the second level. Beatty's considerable wingspan and footwork make him a quality pass protector. He plays with a high motor, and he never truly achieved greatness, though, until his senior year. So I think he should be the type of player who excels in a zone blocking scheme. He makes plays on the move, but he needs time to develop. He only showed true greatness in his senior year, so he might need a couple of years to really establish himself. Then Fuloto, I mean, this guy is just a giant. That's about 6'8", 340 pounds. This collegiate left tackle will have to be moved to right tackle. That's the way it seems due to his lack of lateral agility. I think he's best suited on the right side, where he can engulf and dominate his adversaries with his large frame. The thing that you like about him, he's a natural knee bender despite his height, which helps him play with leverage. He could be a dominant run blocker. You put him at guard, you put him at right tackle, and just watch him open up big holes in the running game. And this is pretty much what you get with Fuloto.
All right, Dan, as far as the interior guys go. All right.
You want me to give you my guys here for the...
No, we'll stay with the tackles.
For the tackles? All right. Yeah. Ralph gave you William Beatty, I believe, right, and Phil Lodeholt. I think another interesting guy is Jamon Meredith out of South Carolina. He's got a lot of athletic ability. Some people question, you know, his lateral quickness, but I think he's got it. And he's got good bulk, good length, and he can run, he can move. So I think, you know, he deserves a shot to play that tackle position. Some people think eventually he'll be better off playing on the inside, playing a guard. But I think he's got enough raw tools and physical tools to play at that tackle position. And then we have Gerald Cadogan out of Penn State, who, you know, he doesn't have the high ceiling that most of these tackles that we talk about do. But I think he's got a higher floor. We heard that one of the draft guys, I think Barton,
yes,
used that analogy for himself. And I think Cadogan's a very similar guy. I think he's got a high floor. He's got good size. He's technically sound. He's solid across the board. Long, good long arms, 35 inches. And he's an unbelievable character kid. I mean, he's got the work ethic. He's bright. He's not going to get in trouble. He understands the game. He's got good instincts. And he's going to be a guy that's just going to be a plus to the team. He's a typical coach's dream. When you talk about what kind of player is a coach's dream, Gerald Cadogan fits that mold. And I think, Ralph, did you bring up even Britton?
No, I didn't. I
think Britton is the guy that could probably be the most likely next guy in terms of who could come in at the end of the first round after those big four. We got those big four guys that are locked first round picks,
uh-huh,
potentially top 10 guys, right?
Yeah.
And then after that, who's the next guy? There's no surefire thing there, but I think even Britton is the most likely to be go somewhere in the first round. And even though he's a junior, he's so technically sound.
Yeah.
He's got such good instinct.
Polished.
He's very polished. So even though he's an underclassman, he actually might be more NFL-ready than some of the seniors coming into this group. Now, compared to a guy like William Beatty, I don't think he's got the potential that William Beatty does, but I think definitely for year one and year two, he's going to be a better football player.
All right, so that's going to do it without tackles, right? So, Dan, I'll lead us off as far as the offensive linemen. Which one of these guys will go on day one?
Well, moving to the interior, it's not that strong this year, to be honest. But the one guy that I really like a lot is Phil Lodeholt's cohort on the left side of the line, Mr. Duke Robinson, who's been at times a dominant run blocker for the Oklahoma Sooners. I mean, when this guy gets moving and he's got 360 pounds pulling around from out tackle, if you're a linebacker, you don't want to see this guy coming at you. The question with him is consistency. You know, he doesn't seem to be the most consistent performer, but I think the upside is there. Challenging him to be the top guard is Andrew Levitre out of Oregon State, who has a very good mobility for a guard, very athletic, a lot of good potential. He's a guy that played tackle at the college level, but the arm length that we talked about, you mentioned with Robert Gallery, he's got only 32.5-inch arms. So he was grouped with the tackles at the scouting combine. But because of that, that pretty much takes him out of the picture. I talked to his coach, Mike Riley, at Oregon State, and he pretty much agreed that he's going to have to move inside. But he's sure that he's going to be a solid to above-average 10-year pro. So I think Levitre is a very good second-round pick that teams could, build that interior line. And then another former offensive tackle is Max Unger from Oregon. I think his value here is debatable. Is he the best center, the second best center, the third best center? I think it depends what kind of scheme you want to run. If you're more of a zone blocking scheme and you want guys who are athletic, can move, you're not worried about them being power guys, I think Unger could be your guy. But he's not going to overpower people. He could get pushed around a little bit by bigger nose tackles. But obviously the fact that he was able to play tackle, left tackle in the Pac-10, speaks to his athletic ability.
Not your classic drive blocker.
Definitely not. No, he's not. So it depends on what kind of system you have,
whether
you, you know, how you value and how you rank these guys.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Ralph.
Yeah, I have Herman Johnson here. He's one of my favorite interior linemen. He's just a mountain of a man at 6'7", 350 pounds, and he actually lost about 30 pounds in the offseason. So, look, Johnson is just a plain road grader who uses his great strength and astonishing quickness for a man his size to move players off the ball. He neutralizes pass rushers with a thunderous punch and is very alert versus the blitz. He's not a Kevin Mawai type, though, who can pull and trap downfield and into the second level, but he plays with good leverage. He gets underneath his man, and he'll be a real asset on a run-oriented team. The other guy that I love, and I think he has to be my favorite guard, center/guard in the draft, and that's Eric Wood out of Louisville. Wood is my number one interior lineman in the draft. He's an animal in the running game who drives defensive tackles back. He sustains his blocks by playing through the whistle of every play. In addition, the former Cardinal effectively picks up the inside blitz. It would be a crime if he isn't a day one pick. And then you also have Alex Mack out of California at 6'4", 312 pounds. Mack is a tall and athletic center who's a hard worker with the ability to trap block, lead screen plays, and block linebackers at the second level. Like William Beatty, he's good on those combination blocks where he makes the initial block at the line of scrimmage and then engages with defenders downfield. He needs to maintain his balance a little bit better and provide more push on short yardage plays. But overall, I think he's a great prospect who's gifted enough even to play guard if he wants.
All right. Well, Ralph, how about some of the offensive line sleepers?
Well, the sleepers here, I'm going to start off with the Buckeye, the former Buckeye, Alex Boone. He's a very tall player at 6'8", about 330 pounds, has long arms, decent power. He's not the type of lineman that you're going to bull rush through because of his great strength. He's versatile enough to play on the right or left side, but projects as more of a right tackle at the pro level. I think this guy could be a mauler as a run blocker, but lacks the foot speed and is ill-suited to handle speed rushers off the edge. The guy's durable. He was a four-year starter in college, but he needs to be more mature off the field. Then you also have Garrett Reynolds, who has tremendous upper body strength. He locks onto defenders. He recognizes the blitz. Has good bloodlines, by the way. He's the nephew of Hacksaw Reynolds, who played for the Rams and the 49ers. I'm sure you guys remember him.
I think Ralph just picked him so he could say Hacksaw there.
But what I don't like about him, what I saw of him at the combine, it was his footwork. I don't like his footwork. I don't like his overall quickness. He's definitely a right tackle at the next level, but he's a tough kid who will give you everything he has. He's a bit of an overachiever that's probably going to be taken in the lower rounds. Then a guy with more upside is Tyrone Green, a former defensive tackle who's a bit raw but has impressive lateral agility, maintains his balance in pass protection. He also utilizes a quick first step to immediately engage defensive tackles, has good vision on the move, can hit moving targets. I think Green is a very underrated player who just needs to play a little bit lower, sustain his blocks a little bit better, but he has what you're looking for in a guard. And then the other guy I wanted to talk about is Antoine Caldwell out of Alabama. He plays with a nice wide base. He's quick off the snap with terrific burst to get to his man immediately and create a running lane. Caldwell, he's not a Kevin Mawai type either. He lumbers around a little bit. He doesn't have great lateral quickness, and he's not the type of guy that's going to get to the second level. But what he is, he's a physical and aggressive player who will do well as a drive blocker in a run-oriented scheme.
All right, Dan, how about some of your sleepers?
Well, I think we'll start with Nebraska's Lydon Murtha. I mean, the most athletic tackle in this draft, 4.34, 20-yard shuttle. this kid can move, man. I mean, he moves like a linebacker or something, not like an offensive lineman. The question is, he's got a little bit of a reputation of being soft, and he wasn't a highly productive collegian, so he's a little bit of a developmental guy. And a big developmental guy is Sebastian Vollmer from Houston. This kid's like 6'7", 6'8", born in Germany, a high riser. I think I wouldn't be surprised if he goes somewhere in the second round. We're talking, this is a pure potential pick in Mr. Vollmer out of Houston. A lot of raw upside with him. Definitely a guy that's going to take 2-3 years. But, you know, a team like New England would be so ideal. They got a lot of picks. They don't necessarily need everyone to contribute right away. Xavier Fulton out of Illinois, I like a lot, similar to Boone. Good mobility, can kind of get out there and block. And I like what I saw from him in the Senior Bowl. A little underrated guy, not a very high ceiling, but I think he can play left tackle, which is a big question mark with a lot of these guys coming out. And now moving inside, my guy, Mr. Craig Irvick, of course, out of Wisconsin. I love this kid. I've always liked him as a college player, but he really impressed me more so at the Senior Bowl, where he was just, you know, he just excelled at everything they asked him to do. And these one-on-one drills are set up so much in the favor of the defensive guys. You know what I mean? The defensive guys really have the edge in those one-on-one drills that they do at these all-star games. And especially a guy like Irvick, who's not considered the quickest guy of all, and he handled everybody pretty good one-on-one. So I was really impressed by that. And then at Texas Tech, we have Luis Vasquez, who's one of the strongest guys, 39 reps in the combine. And, you know, I think he's a power guy, and he's had to deal with playing in space with the wide splits that they use in Texas. So I think he's another guy that'll be a solid mid-round pick.
Okay. Well, our next guest, Asher Tandem, a huge tandem, and probably the most fearsome left side of any offensive line this past season in college football. And that's going to be Duke Robinson and Phil Lodeholt out of Oklahoma. All right. They'll be joining us in 1 second. Just give me 1 minute, please. Okay, Ashley, we have Phil Lodeholt, Duke Robinson. We're hoping he's going to join us in a few minutes. Hey, Phil, thank you for joining us on the All Access Football Friday show.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, I'm Rodney Tao. I'm a partner, Ralph Mancini, my other partner, Danny Mogagnon. All right, our first question, the draft is tomorrow. What are your plans for tomorrow?
I'll just be hanging out at my house with a bunch of close family and friends.
Okay, right, close family and friends. What number are we talking about, 20? 50 people, how many?
Probably about 30 people over here.
Okay, these are the people basically who have played a large part, I imagine, you getting to where you are. I mean, how excited are you right now, you know, on the eve of being drafted into the league?
I mean, I'm extremely excited. I've been waiting on this moment my entire life, and for it to finally be here, I mean, I'm definitely excited about it.
I'm sorry, Ralph.
Hey, Phil. Ralph Mancini here. In a recent interview, you said that you're looking to improve your technique a little bit more. Is that just a case of playing a little bit lower? Could you explain that?
It's basically just everything from footwork to playing lower. I mean, just everything involved with technique. I mean, I played two years of Division I ball and had a chance to improve vastly from the time I got there to the time I left, and I'm just looking to improve that some more.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that you were a junior college transfer who's only played at Alabama for 2 years. Oklahoma for 2 years. Do you think that you would have been a top 5 or a top 10 pick had you been with the Sooners for a full 4 years?
I don't know. You know, that's not for me to call or decide, you know what I'm saying? But, I mean, I feel that my time that I was in Oklahoma, I got a lot better just in those 2 years. So I could imagine that I would have got a lot better if I was there for 4 years, definitely.
Well, we understand that you had some private meetings, some private workouts with Oakland, Pittsburgh, Minnesota, Cleveland, Baltimore, et cetera. What are these teams trying to find out from you in person that they can't pick up off of watching some film on you?
I mean, I think they just want to see if I can move for a guy my size, see how I can move. Sometimes on the film, you can see a guy move, but, you know, it's a little bit better to see it in person. I mean, just probably try to get to know me a little bit better as a person, try to see what type of guy I am, see how I react with people, things like that.
All right, well, Phil, we have your partner on the left side of the line in Oklahoma join us right now, and that's, of course, Duke Robinson.
Duke,
hey, Duke, how are you?
How you doing?
Doing well. We got your partner, Phil Lodeholt, on with us. I start off, Phil, with, I'm going to ask you the same question. This is the eve of the draft. How many people are, how are you spending your day tomorrow?
Phil?
Duke. I'm sorry, that's Duke.
Oh, me? Man, I'm just going to be chilling with my family, you know, my family and my friends sit around just, you know, watch it unfold.
Okay, well, how excited, I mean, this is like, well, for guys like us who've been watching sports all our lives, I mean, I can't even imagine what you guys are feeling like on a day before this is going to happen. Because right now you're looking at, you're 19 hours away from the draft. I mean, what are you doing after this interview? Are you doing other interviews? Are you just going out for the night? Are you trying to take your mind off of it? Is it a situation where you can't think of it? That one's for either one of you guys, Phil or Duke.
Well, for me, this is my last interview right here, and after this, I'm just probably going to relax and just take it slow and see what happens.
Exactly. And I'm pretty much on the same page. This is my last interview. I've been doing, like, major interviews the whole week. So I'm just going to, you know, get with my friend. We're going to go out, go eat, you know, just chill. And when tomorrow comes, you know, it's going to be like Christmas. It's going to be like waiting to unwrap the gifts of Christmas for you, so.
I hear that, guys. I mean, so we have the honor of doing the last interview with the both of you as amateur players, mm-hmm. since you'll be entering the NFL pretty shortly. Let's start with Duke first. Duke, how much did it help having Phil next to you along on the offensive line?
Oh, man, it helped me a lot. You know, it was, you know, we had coming in, and when he was brought in, we didn't have a left tackle, and I was actually playing left tackle, so he came in. I got back to left guard, and then, I mean, once he came in, I could see, and we seen what he can do. It was wonderful, man. So I mean, it was a great time that we swung together, you know, on the offensive line, and also being known as one capable of being one of the great offensive line in college football. So I mean, I had a great time.
And Phil, the same question for you: how much did it help knowing you got such a productive guard next to you like Duke?
I mean, it helps a lot, man. That was coming in. I knew that I had the opportunity to play next to the best guard in the country, and it really felt good coming in knowing that I know that I had to my right side, I had one of the best guards in the country. I didn't have to worry about anything going inside, and we really meshed real good together, and we took advantage of that this past season and the season before that.
Now, for the both of you, again, I'll start with Phil first, and then Duke could answer. You know, last year a bunch of guys left Oklahoma, Malcolm Kelly, Reggie Smith. I'm sure you guys thought about it. How come you decided to come back for your senior season? And looking back, do you think it was the right move? I mean, did the reason you came back, did that come to fruition?
Well, for me, it was just about having a chance to come back and compete in some big games and play alongside Duke and the rest of the O-line and get the opportunity to, you know, keep what we had going. And, I mean, definitely I think it paid off in the right direction. We had a chance to compete in the national championship game. Got another year with Duke, and it was definitely right for me.
And for me, I think it was pretty much the same situation, you know, just camaraderie with the guys and having the opportunity of being able to compete for a national championship and knowing the things that we had in our team and within our unit had what we had going on. So, I mean, it was kind of hard for me to leave that and just, you know, and take the next step to the NFL, which I thought I needed a lot of, you know, polishing up and a lot of learning more about the game. So, I mean, it worked out pretty good for me also.
Hey, Duke, what are some of the advantages of playing so many years in OU's offense that uses so many formations and schemes? You know, how does that help you think, at the next level? I know that, you know, you talk to a lot of your former teammates, guys like Davin Joseph, who's now an NFL player, plays for Tampa Bay. What are some of the advantages that you think you have playing with a team like Oklahoma?
I think the knowing of the different formations and learning all the different plays and the different type of schemes that we run, and a lot of those things that we run, they run in the NFL. So, I mean, when a lot of the visits that I went on or whatever, and communicating with the coaches and drawing, and I was getting up to the board, you know, they were shocked at the things that I knew and some of the calls that I knew, because they was making some of the same calls. So, I mean, I think it worked to my advantage, I mean, to the fullest also.
All right, Phil, let me ask you a question, okay? Now, you both got to the WINT last year, Phil. So what do you think you learned more this year that you didn't know last year if you would have came out as a junior?
I say for me it was more, like I said earlier, I need to improve my technique. And I think that from last year to this year, the technique was amazing that I learned. Just me being able to soak everything in, playing football on a high level again for another year, second year in a row, playing on the highest level you can play on in college football. I think just for me it was just the opportunity to compete again and continue to play on a high level.
All right, Duke, same question for you. What did you learn your senior year that you didn't know if you would have came out your junior year?
I mean, basically the same thing, you know, just being more technique sound and learning more about the game of football. And also not only just on the football side, but more about the ages and the financial things that I was going to experience when I was making the transition from the college, from the collegiate level to the NFL. So, I mean, it was just more on that aspect, you know, of learning more about the game and ages and financial guys and the things that I need to know and be aware of when I get ready in the NFL. So,
hey guys, let me ask you some real important questions here. Let's get to the real nitty gritty. Duke, who's the better dancer, you or Phil?
I am for sure though. He already know.
How about Phil? Who's the better singer between you guys?
Yeah, I can sing. He can keep it dancing, but I can sing though.
Hey, Smokey Robinson, right? That's in the genes. You can't cheat that.
I took that from him though.
How about in the video games? I'm sure you guys must be playing either Madden or NCAA or whatever. Who's the one that's the king of the controller?
Be honest, me and Duke lived together for a year, and we never had one game console.
Never had one game. We really not even in the games like that, though. Not me.
Really?
Yeah, we never had one
hey guys.
Game console. We lived together, never had one.
Well, hey, guys, who's better at playing hoops? Phil, I understand that you're a pretty mean dunker, so who's better at that?
Nah, yeah, I already
you had it right when you said it.
I already beat the 21 game. I already won the 21 game between me, him, and our right guard. So he already know.
You said it right the first time when you said I was a pretty mean dunk.
He already know.
I can imagine the trash talk must be pretty fierce when you guys play then.
He already know. Got to beat the crossover. He already know though.
Yeah. And I dunk on him any day.
Is that true, Duke? I don't picture you being the kind of guy that would just
Phil
let back
and them donuts, man. I'm telling you. Back and them donuts and coffee, I'm telling
you. All right.
So, wait, let me ask you then, guys. If you don't play video games, then what did you do when it was it was a little too chilly to go out and play basketball? What did you guys do to pass the time?
I mean, we were so tied up with school and football that every little chance we got, I was sleeping. You know, I mean, from doing all the extra work and practice and some workouts and school, I was trying to get some sleep in, you know, something like that. That was the only thing I was going to be doing.
Likewise, we was a pretty boring household. We wasn't the average college household. We was pretty boring. So, yeah. Like you said, we slept when it was time to sleep, and that was it.
All right. Well, Duke, let me ask you, what are you going to miss most about college?
I heard that the camaraderie of the team and like NFL is like totally different. I mean, a lot of guys got a lot of different things. They marry and, you know, all the guys don't kick it like how they kick it in college. So, I mean, probably that'll probably be the most thing. But I can handle it though.
All right, Phil, same question.
Yeah, I probably second what Duke said. Probably just be the camaraderie, you know, having a roommate, being your teammate at the same time, and just camaraderie of, you know what I'm saying, being with the same guys every day. We had a good time with each other, learned a lot from each other. Everybody was from different places. I'd probably say the camaraderie would be the thing I'm going to miss the most.
Okay. All right, well, guys, before we let you go and we thank you for joining us, we like to do this thing we call Three and Out. We're going to ask each of you one question since it's two of you. Phil, you lead us off, all right? The first question is going to be for you, Phil. Last movie you saw?
Jason.
Friday the 13th?
Yeah, Friday the 13th. I called it Jason, but it's Friday the 13th, yep.
Okay, that's the latest one, of course. All right. Big Duke.
Yeah.
Last movie you saw, big guy?
Fast and the Furious. New one.
Okay, guys. Favorite basketball players of all time, both of you.
Shaquille O'Neal.
Nice.
With Diesel. I gotta go with the same thing.
I like that. Enough of that Jordan, man. I heard too much Michael Jordan. Third down and final question. If you could only watch one TV show, what would it be? Phil first.
Martin.
Martin?
It's classic,
yep.
Man.
Duke?
TV show?
Yep.
I'm trying to see. Boy, the first one.
Don't tell me Desperate Housewives.
I like watching the first 48.
Okay, all right. The little crime shows, crime-solving shows.
I've been meaning to check that one out.
A little mystery.
I like that. I was talking to... who is it? Senderic Marks, and he said the same thing. He wants to be an FBI guy, so that was his show.
Yeah. Me and him, he lived right above me. We trained in the same place and everything to go.
Okay, you guys are probably watching it together then. All right, cool.
Hey, guys. We want to thank you very much for joining us on, you know, this very big night for you guys, and good luck tomorrow and Sunday, and we look forward to seeing you on the NFL field on Sundays next year.
All right. Thanks a lot. Appreciate you having us.
Okay, best of luck, guys.
Thanks.
All right, thank you, guys. That was that fearsome left side of the Oklahoma offensive line with the Duke Robinson and Big Phil Loadholt. I mean, it's going to be interesting. It's great when you have a partnership like that, but I imagine it's terrible when you got to break that partnership up. But then again, who knows? Maybe the same team would draft both of them.
But you know what? I mean, both of these players are going to be well-equipped to handle the NFL. They played with the premier program that used a lot of different formations and schemes. And as Duke Robinson told you, he surprised a lot of NFL people with his knowledge, with his breadth of knowledge as far as offenses are concerned. So both of these guys should be quality NFL players.
Okay, and I also want to direct everyone back. If you go back to NFLDraftBible.com and you check, you click on the prospect, now for the top 100, we have a video highlight of the top 100 prospects. So don't forget to give that a look before, during, and even after the draft tomorrow. All right? All right, guys, basically we're waiting on one of those top four offensive tackles. That's Michael Orr out of Ole Miss. We're hoping he's going to call, but we're not sure just yet. He hasn't confirmed. But speaking of the two big guys that we just had, Rob, you were just talking about, I mean, where do you see Loadholt going?
Loadholt, I could see him going as high as maybe early second round. I could see him maybe go to the Seattle Seahawks in the second round. You know, I know that they need to reinforce themselves at the tackle position. And if he's there, I mean, you're talking about a guy who you could just plug in at right tackle and just drive block and open up some big holes for the running game. I could see him possibly going up that high. I've seen other mock drafts where he's gone even higher. I'm projecting him as a high second-round guy.
Okay. Conversely, we've got the Duke. What do you see Duke Robinson going?
Well, with Duke, it's a little bit more difficult because you're talking about a guard, you know, as opposed to a tackle. You know, tackles are a high commodity. Tackles are always going to be taken before guards. I could see Duke being – maybe the first guard being taken in the draft. And what does that mean overall? Maybe he's a second-round pick. I could definitely see that in the cards for him.
All right, so there's basically a very good chance that these guys will go on the first day.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, that's really interesting. You just sit back and think about, well, that's part of the reason why Oklahoma did play in the national championship game. Like I said, we're riffing here. Hopefully our next call is going to call in.
Well, Rod, you know, I mean, we were, you know, going through the list of all the different offensive linemen are going to be drafted, possibly drafted tomorrow, and we left out a couple of sleepers here. You know, one of the guys is Andy Kemp out of Wisconsin. You know, he's a prototype Wisconsin Badger O-lineman that comes with great size and strength at 6'5 and 320 pounds. Kemp is a load that can't be pushed back. He typically neutralizes the bull rush. He's a good finisher. And then you have Ramon Foster, a two-year starter for Tennessee. He's stout at the point of attack, provides tremendous push in the running game, is a hard worker. He just keeps getting better. And then you have Roger Allen III. You know, he's a small school guy, the Missouri Western. He was just dominant at the collegiate level, has raw power, a lethal first step. He's an immovable guard that defenders have no chance against in one-on-one battles. And the thing that you liked about him is when he went against top competition in Texas versus the Nation, you know, he did pretty well there. He provided some nice pancake blocks. So I think this is a developmental guy with high upside.
I mean, the one encouraging thing that you see in the league, though, is the appreciation of the guards. I mean, I know the guards don't appreciate it like the tackles, but you look at what, like, Alan Faneca got last year as a free agent from the Jets. So, I mean, when are the guards as respected as the tackles? And when you think that will come?
I know. I think the tackles are always the highest commodity. I think the tackles are always the premier offensive lineman. They're going to get picked first. But look, guard is very important. And depending on your type of scheme, if you're a team like the Carolina Panthers, that's a run-oriented team, yeah, guards are very important. And if you can get a guy like Duke Robinson, you know, this is a guy that you want to build your offensive line around. So, yeah, guards are definitely important, especially, you know, guys that are versatile also, maybe guys that could play both center and guard.
All right. Well, who are some of these guys that we might be speaking about this time next year, Dan, as far as the O-linemen?
Well, I think a couple of interesting guys come out of the Big 12 conference, guys that decided, speaking of Oklahoma, and one of them is their former teammate, Trent Williams, a tackle who thought about going but was definitely very wise in deciding to return for his senior year as a Sooner, just as Duke did and just as Phil did, and particularly because he played on the right side of the line. Now he gets a chance to shift to the left side, protect Sam Bradford's blind side, and if he excels and does well there, he really improves his stock. Another player who's got the duty of protecting the golden-armed quarterback is Adam Ulatowski out of Texas, and he's protecting Mr. Colt McCoy. I think both of these guys have a chance to be day one guys, potentially even first round picks with big senior seasons. I think the top two senior guards are Sergio Rendell out of Virginia Tech and Mr. John, who's been a consistent performer since day one. This kid was a freshman All-American, and he's just been solid across the board every year as a Hokie. And then we have John Jerry, Perry Ajeri's younger brother, who's another player who thought about leaving early and coming back, but made a wise decision in returning. I think we had Tyson Jackson on, and he said he was the toughest guy he faced this past season in the SEC. So he can definitely do battle with the big boys, and he's a potential day one guard next season. In terms of the younger players, a guy I really love is Brian Bulaga, the left tackle out of Iowa. I mean, this is a prototypical Iowa tackle. I heard Ralph talking about the Wisconsin lineman. Well, Iowa's also known for producing linemen, and he's got it all. He looks like he could be, with two more years left as a college player, I would not be surprised if he's a top 10 pick in the 2011 draft. I mean, I think he's the single reason why Norwood out of South Carolina, the outside linebacker, decided to go back to school, because he got manhandled by Bulaga in the bowl game, and he must have said, wow, if this kid did this to me, what are NFL players going to do to me? I need to come back for another year of schooling. And then moving, you know, there's a couple other juniors there, guys like Lee Zimba from Auburn, Steve Schilling of Michigan, Anthony Davis, the big kid down in Rutgers. You got Quentin Sturdivant, who's now going to be a redshirt sophomore, who missed all of last season, left tackle at Georgia. And one of my favorite players is junior guard Rodney Hudson from Florida State. Very technically sound, very athletic. He's one of those guys that stepped in once again from day one, has been putting on weight, is getting very good coaching from the staff there at FSU, continues to improve. And I think, you know, with a couple more pounds, he may be one of those types of one of those rare guards that could sneak into the first round 2 years down the road.
All right, Ralph, what have you got?
Yeah, I've got a few guys here. I want to start off with Ciron Black from LSU. This guy is just a mauler in the running game. He's very athletic. He plays with a mean streak. And even though he happens to be a very nice guy off the field from what they tell me, he's a good combo of size and speed. He can make he could be just as good as Eugene Monroe potentially, and should be a high draft pick next year, a very fundamentally sound player who should adjust quickly to the pro game. Then the other guy that I like here is from Penn State, my school, Stefan Wisniewski. The Pittsburgh native is shifting over to center from guard next season to replace A.Q. Shipley, who is entering the draft. The man that they affectionately call Wiz is athletic, and he's highly intelligent with great mobility, footwork, and I think he should adjust well to his new position at center very well due to his ability that he's already shown in spring practice to make the proper reads, adjustments, and line calls. I think he has a skill to excel either in a zone blocking scheme or a power running scheme. I think he's a stud, just like his uncle Steve Wisniewski was, who formerly played with the Oakland Raiders. Then I also like the big tackle, Russell Okung. He started every game at left tackle for Oklahoma State over the past 2 years. He's a very skilled blocker with great footwork. Did a great job versus some premier ends this past season, such as Brian Arakpo. I think he's talented enough to play at various positions along the line, and he could be a first-round pick next year. And then John Moffitt, the center, plays for the Wisconsin Badgers. I like him as well. The Connecticut native is an athletic and physical center in the great tradition of Wisconsin Badger football. He's the type of nasty run blocker that sets the tone for the rest of the line at his center position. And just quickly, to go back to some of the sleepers we talked about before, I left out A.Q. Shipley out of Penn State. This is a guy that he's strictly a center. You can't really shift him to guard. Not much to look at in terms of measurables, but he offers intangibles. He has experience on both sides of the line as a master at calling out assignments, and is also a good pass protector who maintains a very wide base for leverage. He provides leadership qualities. He's a tough kid. Look for A.Q. Shipley to go in the fifth or sixth round.
Okay. All right. Guys, since we have time, I want to get back to some of the news items we had earlier. Of course, we spoke ad nauseum about Sanchez, the draft rumor, and how basically he seems to be the prettiest girl at the dance, and everyone's looking to take him out right now, apparently. But Jake DeLone, this was in a surprise move to me, at least, based upon the playoff performance against the Arizona Cardinals. Jake DeLone signs a 5-year, $42 million extension. And, of course, we know these contracts don't mean much, but this is what's important. $20 million of that is guaranteed. Is that a shock or is that a shock?
I'm pretty stunned, man. When I saw the big numbers there next to Jake DeLome, I really wasn't expecting that. I don't know if I was sleeping that on that or not. But, you know, like you said, he really didn't come off a big-time performance. To be honest, you know, I think we've most likely seen the best of Jake DeLome already, and I thought, you know, they're a team that might consider going in a different direction, but obviously they're, you know, sticking to DeLone. They're staying on that path, and we'll see how it works out. I mean, I understand they're not a team that's going to win games throwing the ball 30, 40 times. That's not their style. They want to win with defense. Although their defense took a step back last season, but they want to win John Fox-style football, is win with defense and running the football and have Jake DeLone as a game manager type. But that's exactly what he didn't do. He didn't manage the game in the playoffs. He gave it away with turnovers. So I don't know. I'm kind of surprised coming off that game. I don't know if they know something that he wasn't 100%, and maybe it's something that's not a major issue, but it is pretty surprising.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised by this as well. I'm not the biggest Jake DeLone fan, but I'll play devil's advocate here, and I'm thinking that maybe the reason why Carolina signed him is, number one, let's all remember that Jake DeLone last year was coming back from Tommy John surgery, so we all know that in baseball, with a lot of these pitchers that undergo that type of procedure, they're not the same pitcher until their second year. So maybe the same thing is going on here with Jake Delhomme. You know, he sort of faded. He really faded towards the end of the season. Even in I'm not only talking about the playoff game versus Arizona. He just wasn't himself towards the end of the season, down the stretch in the regular season. So, you know, that might have been because he just physically wasn't ready to be that type of quarterback that he was a few years ago when he led Carolina into the Super Bowl back in 2003, 2004. So maybe they're thinking that with another year of recovery, Jake Delhomme will be a little bit closer to the quarterback he was a few years ago. And then, you know, and Dan also mentioned the fact that this is not a team that employs a lot of 4 and 5 receiver formations. They want a quarterback out there that is going to be able to subject his ego to, you know, to lead a run-oriented offense and not have any problems with that. And that's what Jake Delhomme gives you. You know, he's a heady veteran. He's been around for a while. And I'm thinking that they sort of think that with another year of recovery from that Tommy John surgery, he's going to be a lot better than he was last year.
Okay. Well, how about this? Okay, we've had the Jay Cutler situation. And, of course, one of the teams prominent in the Jay Cutler situation was the Washington Redskins, who has a quarterback named Jason Campbell. Now you're hearing reports that Jason Campbell is going to request a trade if the Redskins draft a quarterback. What do you think about that one? We'll start with you, Dan.
Well, I mean, I think that it's pretty obvious that they're not sold on Jason Campbell being their quarterback of the future. I mean, it's funny because being up here in New York, we always talk about how the Jets always seem to get involved with every quarterback that's available. But, I mean, at least it's, you know, we're talking about Kellen Clemens and
Fred Ratliff,
who, even if you like them, are really completely unproven guys. And Washington is in on every guy as well, whether it's a rookie, whether it's a disgruntled, immature kid in Denver, whoever it may be, it seems like Washington is interested. So I guess Campbell is not their guy. I mean, to me, they almost have to make some sort of move now, because what kind of message are they sending to him and to the rest of the team? I mean, if they were happy with this kid, they would not be even thinking about any of these other guys. He's young. They used a first-round pick on him. So, you know, you would assume that they like some of the progress he's shown, but I guess they don't. And I think the message is loud and clear. We don't believe in Jason Campbell.
Well, again, I'm going to play devil's advocate here, and I think it's unfair for Jason Campbell just to be sort of cast aside. And they do have to trade him if they do trade up and make a move for Mark Sanchez, because, again, it's not fair that they brought this kid in. And, you know, I think if you look at his overall numbers, I think he's done a pretty fair job, has more touchdowns, about a 35 to 23 touchdown interception ratio over his career, an 80 passer rating, quarterback rating over his years in the NFL. And the thing is with Jason Campbell is, you know, I don't think they ever put a real good offense around him. He was sacked 38 times last year, so he was on his back. And let's face it, you know, throughout his career, who's been his number one receiver? Santana Moss? You know, come on, give me a break. You know, if this guy would have had better receivers around him, more weapons, I think Jason Campbell, I think at this point, would have been a much better quarterback. And I think you just need to give him another year, in my opinion.
And plus, just an aside to that, remember, Jason Campbell's a guy who's been working in, like, I believe it's like 5 straight years with 5 different offenses,
yeah,
including last year. So even though I'm not a big fan, so you got to keep that in consideration when you're evaluating the quarterback. You can't keep switching the system on him and asking him to adapt. But we have our next guest, who's Jamie Samuelson from the Detroit Free Press, and Mike in the Morning will be coming up in a minute.
After years of blood, sweat, and tears, it all comes down to this.
Draft Weekend Odyne. To celebrate this year's Gridiron Draft, the Fantasy Sports Channel is rushing more than 24 hours of live draft action your way.
And we're the only place on the planet to do it with a fantasy football twist.
Excitement begins Saturday, April 25th at 10 a.m. Eastern, with 14 continuous hours of nonstop draft day coverage, plus another live draft block beginning Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern. The Fantasy Sports Channel. Only on Blog Talk Radio.
It's a schedule you can bet on.
Hey, Jamie Samuelson, welcome to the All Access Football Friday show.
Hey, guys, how are you?
We're fine. I'm Rodney Tell. My boys with me, Danny Mogagnon, Ralph Mancini. And we're going to start off with the the $30 million question. Is it going to be Stafford in Detroit?
Yeah, I think it's going to be Stafford or Detroit. You know, here we are talking Friday night, and I think the Lions would have preferred to have something done on Friday afternoon with Matthew Stafford. I think they're kind of playing a bit of a game of chicken here because they've kind of let it be known that they have a deal in place with Aaron Curry. So if Stafford doesn't agree to their terms, they can go with Curry, so that can push some pressure on Stafford. But, look, they want a quarterback. They need a quarterback. I think they do like Stafford. Look, the Lions are coming off 16 losses, so they need a lot of things. They don't just need a quarterback. They need a lot of things. But it's really hard to win this league without a quarterback, and I think they see when they like in Stafford. So, yeah, if I had to bet the $64,000 or $30 million question, I do think it's going to be Matthew Stafford.
All right, let me ask you something real quick. Okay, being that you're associated with the Detroit Free Press, you're also a member of the Mike in the Morning radio show, so I would figure you have your finger on the pulse of the fans. What would the reaction be if they drafted Curry instead of the quarterback?
Well, it's funny you ask that. Curry's actually the popular pick among Lions fans. I mean, the website I work for at freep.com for the Free Press, they've done polls of the fans. You know, a lot of different places have, and Curry is the favorite for about 60-65%. Now, there's a lot of things that go into that. One is the belief, and this is justified, that, you know, you can't just draft a quarterback. You have to draft things around a quarterback. You need an offensive line. You need a defense. You need a running back. And the Lions really don't have those things. So that's part of it. And the other part is Joey Harrington is not that far in our rearview mirror. I mean, and we were pretty stung by Joey Harrington. So there's this fear out there that they're going to draft Joey Harrington and that Matthew Stafford is Joey Harrington reincarnate. Now, that's probably not fair to Stafford, but until somebody replaces Harrington and is better than Harrington as a Lions draft pick, there's always going to be that fear out there.
Well, you know, Jamie, Ralph Mancini here, in a recent interview, Coach Schwartz said that he wants Detroit to be an all-weather type of team, not just an indoor team. And that's understandable because, you know, they're going to play a lot of cold-weather teams, you know, Green Bay, Chicago. So his line of thinking from what I gleaned from that interview is that he wants to build that big offensive line. I'm thinking that they are going to look for some, you know, some tackles, some guards in the draft. What do you see them doing with that second pick in the first round? Do you see them going after a tackle, or do you think they're going to go with defense?
I think they have to go with defense. I agree with you, by the way, on their offensive and defensive lines. Schwartz is a really smart guy. I mean, we all know from what he did in Tennessee and the little we've had to deal with him here the last couple of months here in Detroit. But he's no dummy when it comes to dealing with the media, and it's amazing the number of smoke screens he's put out there because he didn't say that about an all-weather team. He said on Monday or Sunday after the Lions' first minicamp that they needed a big thumper in the middle of that defense, which would make you think they're going for Aaron Curry. And in his very first interview ever in Detroit, before he was even hired as head coach, he said, look, it's about time we replace Bobby Lane around here because the Lions really haven't had a good quarterback since Bobby Lane over 50 years ago. So he has said all the things about all the different positions. But to go back to your question at 20, I just think they have to go on defense. I mean, they do have two tackles. They're not going to let anybody's world on fire, but they have Jeff Backus, who is a, believe it or not, franchised offensive tackle, which is just absurd. And they have Gosser Cherilis, who they took last year out of Boston College, who really did improve as the season went along in the second half. So they have guys who can play the position. They're not all pros, but they're guys who can play. But their defense was terrible last year. I mean, just awful. For 2 years in a row, they've had the worst defense in football. You know, most of the mock drafts I've seen, probably the same you guys have seen, one guy they're really targeting there would be Ray Malaluga, who could start right away in the middle linebacker. That's assuming, of course, they go Stafford. Now, if they go Curry number one, if they can't come to a deal with Stafford and they take Curry, then that changes everything, and maybe they would look to an offensive lineman there at 20. But if they do go with Stafford, Malaluga seems like a solid pick there at 20.
Well, do you see them perhaps going after a defensive tackle? I know that, you know, one of Detroit's major problems last year was stopping the run. I mean, just about anybody, you know, could gain yards on them. You know, they did go out in the offseason and they acquired Grady Jackson, who's a serviceable veteran. But, you know, let's face it, I don't think, you know, there's much of a future out there with Grady Jackson. Do you see them going after some big defensive tackles out there, maybe like a Perry or Jerry?
Yeah, I do. I think that's a good name to watch there. They need everything, guys. I mean, that's the thing. When you go 0-16, if you list off the needs of this football team, they don't need a wide receiver. They got a great one. They don't need a kicker. Other than that, they pretty much need everything. So with that, I'm going to be really fascinated to watch their philosophy. And this is a new general manager, so we'll hope it's a different philosophy than his predecessor, Matt Millen. But, I mean, do you draft for need or do you draft for talent? And most of the people that I've talked to within the organization are suggesting that they aren't going to get too caught up in, okay, we need a defensive tackle. We need a safety. They need to basically improve their talent base because this is a woefully inadequate team. So they are going to be drafting players more so necessarily than positions. So, you know, yes, they need help along the defensive line. You're exactly right. I mean, Sean Rogers was a terrific defensive tackle for them a couple years ago before he decided that he just didn't feel like playing anymore, and that was pretty much the end of Sean Rogers. I mean, he's as talented as any defensive tackle in the league, but just totally lacks motivation at teams of time, and that was his problem in Detroit. So, yes, they do have needs along the defensive line, but you can pretty much say that about any position on the field.
Jamie, one thing they don't need is a new uniform and a new logo. So is this the you know the philosophy here, the hope that a new logo and a new uniform will give a good feel? And how's the city of Detroit taken to that? Or do they just want to see wins, I'm assuming?
Yeah, they just want to see wins. I mean, I don't know about you guys. I don't really see what the big deal is. If you're sitting in the stands watching this team play, I don't even think you can notice the new logo. Yeah, if you look at it up closely, the line is definitely slightly different, and they changed the numbers. But I don't know. I never get caught up too much in the Lions logo. There's a lot of fans who think they need to change away from their color scheme, go to a deeper blue or something like that. I don't know. Ever since they went to the throwback jerseys back in 94, they have these throwback jerseys they put on every now and then. I think those are the coolest uniforms they have. I wish they'd wear those every game, but they're not going to do that. So they did alter it just a little bit, but I guess I just don't see what the big deal is. I mean, they clearly need to change something. The system hasn't worked in Detroit for over half a century, so there is a feeling that they have to do wholesale changes. But it's not about how they look. It's about how they play. And obviously, Lions fans are clinging to the hope that, A, Martin Mayhew is a good general manager, better than Matt Millen, although, come on, let's be honest, the four of us together are better than Matt Millen. And B, that Matthew Stafford can finally be the answer quarterback if that's what ends up being the case. But even if Stafford is a terrific quarterback, they still have a lot to do, a long way to go before they even play themselves into playoff contention.
Well, I agree with you on the uniform for sure. I love those old ones that they pull out on Thanksgiving, those, you know, old school plain jersey, plain helmet,
yep.
Simple, and that's all you need. And win football games, I think that's all the fans want to see. So what is the feel with the new GM? I mean, are the people playing kind of wait and see, you know, not necessarily just feeling because Millen is gone, better days are to come? I know here, an example, we're here in New York, and as soon as Isaiah Thomas left, everybody was like, wow, you know, everything the Knicks did suddenly was great and spectacular, even though they stunk pretty much as badly as they had before.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. The Isaiah comparison, it really strikes home here in Detroit for obvious reasons. I mean, it's amazing that Isaiah and Matt Millen were 1 and 1A as worst executives in all of sports for pretty much most of this century so far. You know, the problem with the Lions is that Martin Mayhew worked under Matt Millen, and so that really rubbed a lot of fans the wrong way, and understandably so. I mean, there was a feeling when Millen was fired at the start of last season that the Lions would basically have to blow this entire thing up and start over. So to basically promote from within to Martin Mayhew, it just didn't seem right, and I can understand that. That said, it's not Martin Mayhew's fault that Matt Millen did what he did. It's not Martin Mayhew's fault that Matt Millen drafted Mike Williams when he already had Roy Williams and Charles Rogers. It's not Martin Mayhew's fault that Matt Millen took Joey Harrington and you know, some horrible second and third round picks along the way. I mean, Matt Millen drafted a guy in the fourth round 2 years ago who got cut in training camp, a guy named A.J. Davis. I mean, how do you draft a guy who can't even make the practice squad in the fourth round? It's inexcusable. So none of that's Mayhew's fault, and I'm trying to give him an open book. I think fans are skeptical, but I think they have a right to be. I mean, Lions fans are predisposed to just assuming the worst, because usually when you assume the worst about the Lions, you're going to be proven right, because that's just been the history of this franchise for the last 50 years. But so far, if you just go on what Mayhew's done, I think he's done a good job. I really do. I mean, I like how he's played this draft so far. He's really played it close to the vest. I like this whole Aaron Curry thing because I think it gives them some leverage against Stafford so they don't get totally taken to the cleaners financially. I mean, you guys know that Roy Williams trade last year. That was absurd what they got back from that It was highway robbery. So I give him all credit for that. So if you judge him solely on what he's done since he took over from Millen, I think he's been okay. So I choose to give the guy a chance. I mean, again, it's not his fault that Millen was as bad as he was. It's his fault that he's joined to Matt Millen because he worked for him. But he can't change that.
Yeah, like I said, great start. But Jamie, one, thank you very much for giving us a couple of minutes of your time. And good luck in Detroit.
Hey, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Good talking to you.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Jamie.
Boom, we thought as Jet fans, we thought we had it bad. All right. Once again, that was Jamie Samuelson from the Detroit Free Press and also the Mike in the Morning Show on WRIF in Detroit. Our next guest is one of these guys who will be drafted tomorrow, or hopefully not, but tomorrow over Saturday. It's Gerald Cadogan of Penn State who joins us again. Gerald, thank you for joining us again.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Okay, now, you're on the eve of the biggest day of your professional life. What are you doing? How do you feel?
You know, I feel good. I'm, you know, a little excited about what's going to be happening and this big opportunity in front of me, and I'm just ready to, you know, get settled in with the team and put the pads on and go to work.
All right. Have you been in discussions with anyone, let's say, that over the last week or so as far as NFL teams?
I've talked to a bunch of different teams, about just draft day contact information, and just seeing if just getting updates as far as if I had any injuries or any off the field incidences.
Yeah, I don't think that's much of a worry just based on the type of kid you seem to be.
Hey,
Gerald, Ralph Mancini here. At this point, does it matter for you where you're drafted? Are you okay with going in the fifth, fourth, sixth round? What are your expectations?
I'm just looking. I'm very much looking forward to the opportunity just to play football. So, you know, if the team picks me in the sixth round, as long as I get picked and get a chance to kind of prove myself, that's what I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to putting the pads on, going to work, and and playing football. I love playing this game, and that's what I'm excited about.
Well, Gerald, if you follow the draft last year, that a league record 8 tackles were taken in the first round last year, with 7 of them who cracked the starting lineup within the first month of the regular season. Do you see yourself as being a contributor in the first year as an NFL pro?
Yeah, I'm like I said, I'm very much excited, put the pads on and go and work. Talk is cheap. I'd rather go out there and show, see, learn the new plays, get acclimated with the new city and the new team, coaches, and really just proving myself. Basically, I know nothing's going to be handed to me on a silver platter, so I'm just, instead of saying I'm going to do this and that, I'd rather go out there and kind of show what I I'm capable of doing and showing what I I can bring to the team.
Would there be an ideal landing spot for you? I believe you're an Ohio native. You play your college ball in Pennsylvania, or basically as long as you don't have to go to Detroit and have people, get down on your game right away, you'd be happy to go anywhere.
Yeah. Right now I'd be happy to, just to get picked by, any team, and I'm very excited about the opportunity ahead of me.
Did you have a favorite team that you rooted for growing up?
Growing up, I really liked the Bengals and, I liked the Steelers, but right now, that's everything's up in the air. My favorite team is whoever picks me on, this weekend.
Were you an Anthony Munoz fan, or was that a little before your time?
That was a little bit before my time.
Hey, Gerald, we understand that you do a lot of charity work off the field, including work with the Special Olympics, Make-A-Wish Foundation. What type of message are you going to try to send to youngsters, even as you become a pro player during your NFL career?
Because you're given an opportunity to play football, I think that gives you a lot of platform and kind of gives you a lot of a little weight behind your voice. And I want to use that to encourage other youth and other young people that they can work hard at what they do and just try to be like a positive example, positive role model for young adults and young children. And that would be a goal of mine if I'm afforded to play a couple more years at the next level.
Well, we also understand off the field
You released a couple of gospel CDs. Are we going to see you on MTV anytime soon, coming out with your own music, your own songs, or are you going to just basically focus on football for the next few years?
Right now, all my efforts and all my concern is wrapped up with football. You know, music will be there for down the road, but right now I have, you know, I'm eat, breathe, and sleep in football, everything, you know, 24/7 right now. So I think there'll be a time for music later, and you know, possibly maybe in the off season here in a couple of years. But right now, like I said, I'm ready to go to work. I'm ready to put the pads on and really showcase what I can do on the field.
So let me ask you this, Gerald. You know, a lot of times they make the rookies go up there in front of the group and do a little song or something. So what direction are you going to go? Are you going to go gospel, something more contemporary, maybe some old school Motown? What do you think?
I haven't even thought about that yet. This is my
first
time
here.
The rookie show. I'm sure, myself and the other rookies to whatever team, you know, I'm blessed to be on. We'll come up with something, but I'm just looking forward to, you know, just getting on the team right now. So I haven't even thought that far forward.
You guys didn't do anything like that in Penn State with the young guys?
Oh, yeah. The freshmen every year during camp, the last day of camp, they put on a little freshman show. They do, a lot of skits and whatnot. So, yeah, it's something that, you know, that all the upperclassmen look forward to.
So when you were a freshman, what skit did you do?
We kind of poked fun at a couple of the coaches and a couple of the senior players. So we just had a couple of skits of different coaches and different players and, you know, kind of poking fun at them.
And how do you think the most recent freshman class fared compared to you guys?
I think, you know, of course I'm biased, but I think, you know, our class did a lot better. We really pushed the envelope on going after a couple of coaches that haven't been poked fun at before. And, you know, I think this past freshman class, they did a good job. But I think, you know, like I said, I'm biased. I think we did the best job.
You guys didn't poke fun at Joe Pa himself, did you?
Oh, yeah. He's every coach is a suspect to these skits.
Hey, tell us a little bit about some of the defensive guys from Penn State heading into this draft. You know, a couple of underclassmen who left school early, Aaron Maben, who looks like he could be a first-round pick, as well as Maurice Evans, who comes from our part here in New York City.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Aaron Maben and Maurice Evans and even Josh Gaines, going against those three has really helped me step up my game, and I think I was well-prepared. Well, I know I was well-prepared for, you know, everybody I faced during the season because I went against, you know, the best in practice and in spring ball day in and day out, doing one-on-ones against them, you know, multiple times each practice. And I think that really helped me. So, you know, Aaron Maben with the speed rush and Josh Gaines with the power rush and, you know, even Maurice Evans, he has a combination of the two. So going against those three defensive ends helped me tremendously during this past season.
What can you tell us about your fellow lineman, A.Q. Shipley, at center? Can you give us a little scouting report on him?
Yeah, definitely. A.Q. Shipley is a workhorse, and you know, if I was going to build a team, I'd definitely, you know, have him on. And he's somebody that's going to work hard. He's definitely a team player and somebody who's a leader. You know, he leads by example on the field. You know, really working hard in the weight room, doing extra study in film, and also Rich Ornberger does a great job. You know, as well. I think the three of us. Having us three, you know, play next to one another for you know, 3 years really helped us, you know, bond and we just fed off of one another. If AQ got a pancake, you know, I wanted a pancake. If I got a pancake, Rich wanted a pancake. So we kind of fed off one another in that respect, trying just to compete and be the best.
All right, Gerald, are you in touch with a former teammate of yours who went number one 2 years ago, Levi Brown?
Yeah, I talked to him, you know, every once in a while. So I ask him, you know, for pointers and, you know, studying his film and, you know, just trying to emulate him on the field because he's a dominant force. And, you know, watching him in the Super Bowl this year was just great.
Any Super Bowl tickets from him?
No, we actually, I think I don't know where I was, but I wasn't able to make it to the game, but I did watch it on TV.
So what types of things is he telling you? Is he telling you anything, I should say, to prepare for going into the NFL, like your first rookie mini camp? Is he preparing you in any way for those types of things? Have you asked questions about that?
I talked even more so to one of my good friends, Tim Shaw, who's with the Jaguars. He went to Penn State linebacker. And, you know, talking to Tim about, you know, what the mini camp is going to be like and what to anticipate and, you know, the speed of the game and just all those other variables that, you know, your agent or, you know, just the ins and outs because, you know, he's been through it and is going through it. So I've talked to Tim Shaw the most.
All right. Hey, Gerald, before early in the show, we were kind of talking about different offensive linemen and breaking them down and strengths and weaknesses. And, you know, one of the things that you possess are pretty long arms, and that's valuable from an offensive lineman. Tell us, you know, explain to the listeners out there how valuable and how important for a left tackle is your arm length.
Definitely, you got to be able to block on the island and be athletic. You know, you're going against – you know, some of the best defensive athletes on the field, the defensive ends. And you have to have, you know, long arms to be able to block in space. It gives you more leverage and, you know, to be able to latch on to a defensive end. And, you know, pass blocking and run blocking just gives you the advantage. You kind of, you know, able to hit them before they get to you.
On that note, Gerald, how important is it to have great anticipation and instincts as an offensive lineman to be able, you know, to read what's in front of you?
I think that's something that I studied from last year until this year, and that's really helped my game, just being able to anticipate stunts, reading the linebackers, the safeties, cheats, you know, just being able to anticipate down linemen stunts on certain, you know, if it's third and long, you know, what tendency does the team have, and that just really gives you the edge and, you know, you're able to pick things up and it doesn't catch you off guard. You're able to react and adjust quicker.
All right. All right, Gerald, before we let you go, you've been here before. We're going to ask you three quick questions. We like to call this three and out. Are you ready?
Yes, all right, sir.
All right, first question is going to be favorite sport outside of football to play?
Track and field.
Your favorite music video of all time?
Imagine Me by Kurt Franklin.
Okay. All right, and wow. Third down, who was your favorite superhero growing up?
Has to be Cyclops from the X-Men.
Okay. Hey, Gerald, thank you for giving us some moments on the eve of the biggest day of your professional life. And good luck going forward, and we'll look forward to seeing you on the field on Sunday.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Okay. Good luck.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. That's Gerald Cadogan, Penn State offensive lineman, or I should say formerly Penn State offensive lineman, who will be a professional probably – or hopefully at this time, maybe not this time tomorrow, because the first round is going to be so long. The first round is probably not going to end for about 4 or 5 hours. So who knows?
Well, I think he falls in that, you know, second, third, fourth round range, potentially. Like Ralph said, these offensive tackles, boy, once they start going and you get that run on them, they suddenly creep up and go higher than you thought they would go. No one last year was predicting, you know, 8 offensive tackles going in the first round, and it happened. So we could see that happen again where people start taking them, and then all of a sudden once one guy gets up, drafted up higher, that moves the next guy up as well. He kind of piggybacks on the guy ahead of him.
And it's interesting. One of the teams that he liked growing up between the Bengals and the Steelers, it's like the Steelers are in the market for offensive linemen, and they draft at the end of the first round.
And it's interesting, as Dan noted before, you know, even a guy like Evan Britton is a guy who's very polished. Well, you could say the same thing about Gerald Cadogan. You know, he's a guy that could read defenses in front of him. He knows how to anticipate. So this is a guy, I think, that should be able to contribute, not even immediately, but I think he should be able to contribute in his first season. And, you know, guys like Bill Parcells say this all the time, you know, beyond physical tools, beyond measurables, he always looks for smart guys, and Gerald Cadogan is definitely that.
Well, I think it's coaching's got to be a big role here, because you could probably say the same thing about A.Q. Shipley, who I think is one of the more underrated offensive linemen in this draft, who you talked about, their center out of Penn State. I think that's a credit to that staff. You got two guys that basically are very technical sound, very good. Maybe neither one of them is that overly impressive in terms of their athleticism or, you know, what they're going to do at the combine, but both of them play football, man. They know how to block. They know they got great technique, And a lot of times that overcomes, you know, pure athletic ability.
Yeah, and you take a look at a guy like Jeff Saturday, who plays for the Indianapolis Colts. You know, here's a guy who wasn't drafted, who didn't have all the measurables. But when you saw him play, when you saw him on film, this is a guy that got the job done. You know, very smart guy, makes all the line calls, makes all the adjustments, and that's what you have in a guy like A.Q. Shipley. So I think a guy like that definitely has a future in the NFL.
You know, it's also pretty interesting, I think, while we were doing this, you know, we did the guys for this year, and we talked about the guys heading into the future, and is it a surprise why a lot of these teams are good teams? You know, Penn State, we talk about Shipley and Cadogan, and they got Wisniewski coming up.
Sure.
You know, LSU has Herman Johnson and Saron Black. Oklahoma, we had both of the guys on heading into this draft, and then they got Trent Williams coming up right behind them. So, you know, it's not the sexy pick. I'll be honest, guys. When I was a kid, right, you know, when I just started getting into this and I'm, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13 into my teenage years, I was already into the draft back then. And I would hate when the Jets would take an offensive lineman. You know what I mean? I couldn't stand it. I wanted a running back. I wanted a wide receiver. I wanted a playmaker.
Exactly.
Somebody who does stuff with the football. But now as you get older and older, you realize, hey, this is how you build a winning team. You build from within. You can have great skill guys, but if the guys in front of them can't block, the skill guys can't do their thing anyway. So unless you have those guys up front, you know, blocking and protecting the quarterback, really the skilled positions players could go to waste.
Hey, Exhibit A, Thomas Jones, 2007 versus 2008. You know, he just didn't suddenly become a great running back. You know, it was because of that offensive line that he had a much better season, that he turned in the season that he did.
And, you know, we may not have that lineman going there, but I think this would be potentially only the second time that two tackles could go in the top three or four since like the 60s. And you know, we could even have four offensive linemen go in the top 10, which I believe has never happened. So it really shows how much of this game has really geared towards that offensive line. Those guys finally get credit. It's not that long ago. It's funny because if you look at a lot of the drafts in like the 40s, 50s, and 60s, you'll rarely see any offensive lineman go in the first round at all. And even going back to the 80s, the value of a center and a tackle was almost like equal, you know, not until we saw those elite pass rushers come into the game that suddenly that tackle position became such a premium that is today that, in fact, four guys could go in the top 10. It's not out of the realm of possibility. And with Andre Smith kind of recouping and regaining some steam, it looks like at least three will go in the top 10.
Well, you know, I think the thing is that also money is an issue, more of an issue now than it was 20 or 30 years ago. And a lot of these teams that have to spend big money on first, second round, and sometimes even third round guys, they tend to be risk averse. And maybe instead of picking the high upside guy, the high upside receiver, the game breaker, maybe they'd rather go with the offensive lineman that, you know, maybe even if he doesn't become a Pro Bowler, you know what you're going to get out of him. You know he's going to be a solid contributor. You know, since 2000, only 7 out of 80 offensive linemen selected in the first two rounds aren't in the league any longer. That's a pretty nice percentage. And then as far as tackles go, of the 23 tackles selected in the top 10 since 1990, only four out of 23 could be considered total flops. You know, I can go through the names, Charles McCray with the Bucks in 91, Antoine Davis, Philly 91, Mike Williams with the Bills in 02, and Robert Gallery with Oakland in 04. But right now, you know, Gallery's a decent guard, so I wouldn't even consider him a total flop. So, you know, tackles and offensive linemen in general, they tend to be the safer picks.
Well, it goes back to that, you know, higher floor deal that we were talking about before. And I think me and Ralph exchanged a couple of emails regarding the quarterback versus the tackle debate. And I think it's about 50-50 in the last, like, 10 years when you had a top-five quarterback and top-five tackle, which direction you would go in. But, like you said, the bust factor is so different because even though you'd rather have had the quarterback than Gallery, I can't remember off the top of my head who was the quarterback that year, but Gallery's still a starting player. He's starting to show glimpses at offensive guard. Maybe the Brickashaw Ferguson isn't going to live up to his Pro Bowl potential, quote-unquote, that people thought he had come in the year. But, hey, 3 years in the league, hasn't missed a start. You know what I mean? So when the quarterback busts, you get Tim Couch, you get Joey Harrington.
Yeah.
The bust level, when they do bust, it hurts you so much more.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the tackles, even when they disappoint and don't fulfill the potential, they're still decent players. They're still pieces of the team.
Yeah, and then even if you do get the talented quarterback, if you don't have a good team around him, I mean, what do you do with him? You know, he can't produce no matter how good he is. I mean, you take a look at David Carr. You might say, well, David Carr is a terrible quarterback. But when he came into the league, he had absolutely no offensive line protecting him. And so this guy was continually sacked, and that did have an effect on him as a player. You know, after a while, he started to flinch. He started to look like Ken O'Brien back there. And believe me, because of that poor offensive line, I believe that David Carr never really developed the way he was supposed to because, you know, this guy was a tremendous athlete. I think he still is a pretty good athlete. But I think, you know, what happened to him in Houston in his first few years really damaged him.
See, you bring up a point that I've argued with people often. It's like a baby's formative years. It's the same thing as you look at a professional. Those early years in the league are where you start to grow. The growth has to come in those early years. You have to learn how to play this game, learn how to do this, learn how to do that. If you play on a team, especially if you're the quarterback, you got to keep in mind you have all this responsibility on you as a quarterback. You basically have to know what everyone is doing on every single play. And if you have to worry about getting hit in addition to worrying about what this guy is doing, what that guy is doing, your career's gonna be short-circuited. And I think that's what happened with David Carr. Because I think certain quarterbacks, they're just in the wrong situation. That's why I want to bring up an interesting article I've read or a little tidbit of sport news from 2 weeks ago. And it basically talked about the failure rate by position now in first round. It's interesting. The quarterback failure rate was 47.7% in terms of failure rate. I don't want to go into the criteria they used, but the criteria I thought was pretty fair. And you look at the failure rate, what hurts more than a failure at a quarterback? Because you're usually drafting these guys at 1, 2, 3, and 4, Achilles Smith, David Klingler. Look at the
And they're going to cost you a lot of money.
But look at this. Okay, Khalil Smith was drafted by who? David Klingler was drafted by who? Look at those teams who drafted them. The Bengals have not recovered yet, and they do now have a franchise quarterback. But they're so far behind because of all those years they wasted with bad draft picks and reaching for quarterbacks. That's why I don't love reaching for quarterbacks. And I don't know why we just have this fascination with quarterbacks.
Well, because it's the marquee position, and it is the most important position in the game, and may arguably in all of sports. It is a critical position. Obviously, we talk about the team, and you need all that, but you do need the quarterback, too. You can't downplay the importance of the quarterback, and this is why the Lions fans, rather than being hopeful, are fearful when they're going to say with the first pick in the draft, the Detroit Lions select Matthew Stafford, because they know the odds are not necessarily working in their favor. And I think a lot of the reason the bust factor is there is because you're going to get a lot more reaches at the quarterback mm-hmm. position than you are at any other position. And I think this draft is a great example. To me, from what they've done production-wise on the field, I don't see how Josh Freeman or Mark Sanchez are first-round picks. Based on if they played another position and had similar college careers and came out as underclassmen, they would not be first-round picks. They simply wouldn't. You know what I mean? If you look at all the other guys that come out, whether it's a Macklin, a Harvin, a Noshon Moreno, these guys are all first-team guys mm-hmm. in their conference. They've all basically done what they could do at the college level. The quarterbacks haven't. They have room to grow, and they should, and they probably would have been better off coming back for another year. But because it's such a difficult position to find, people are going to reach and draft them higher than they should be.
Okay. I know it's an important position. My whole thing with the quarterback is if your team is strong so many at the other positions, understand that you can actually – you don't need that elite quarterback. The days of the 60s, the 70s, having Bradshaw, United,
yeah,
they're different, they're different ways.
Even though the Giants and Steelers are teams that won with defense, it was still Ben Roethlisberger, who was a top 10 pick, Eli Manning, who was the number one overall pick. So even though there's teams that aren't necessarily – you know, geared solely around the quarterback. They're not, you know, Elways or Peyton Mannings. But at the same time, they were guys that were top 10 picks.
Yeah, but I'll say this, but let's look at Roethlisberger. Roethlisberger came aboard a team that was pretty much already. So I'm just saying. So, and he won. The Eli Manning thing came out of left field. I mean, let's be honest, Eli Manning and the Giants winning the Super Bowl came out of left field. No one saw that.
At the end of the day, though, the bottom line is he did win.
Yes.
Ernie, of course, he traded up to get him with the first pick with one goal in mind. That trade was made with one goal in mind, and that was to win the Super Bowl. Whether he needed some help with, you know, a fantastic, you know, catch, and he needed, you know, a great day from their defensive line, bottom line is they got their Super Bowl with it.
Well, let me ask you this. You know, in the case of a Josh Freeman, for instance, he's projected to go in the mid-first round. You know, I mean, what do you do with a guy like him? You know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, to me, he's a second rounder. He's going to be picking the first round because it's not a great quarterback class.
He's got great talent. I'll say this. I don't think comparing his talent to Jamarcus Russell's, who went number one overall, is at all a stretch.
Okay.
In terms of potential, you know what I mean?
All right. Well, we're going to table this for now. Don't forget, we will be back here tomorrow at 11 a.m. for our draft show. We're going to have mini plays back to back to back. And also, don't forget to check out the NFL Draft Bible for all your questions, needs, and we have player video profiles with the player profiles as well.